Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It is good to be back. It's episode 1, season 11. Did you think we weren't going to come back? Of course we were going to come back. It was just a matter of when, wasn't it? We just had to bide our time and see what was going on in the world of rallying. We waited for something to happen. We waited for lots of things to happen. And then we decided, yes, now is a good time to come back. Of course, the week after Monte Carlo, the opening round of the 2018 FIA WRC season. And without further ado, it's time to introduce our esteemed panel once again. We have on my right, Jack Bennion. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
In the middle this week, which will give you a clue to how many people are here, we have Ryan Champion. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, it's good to be back.
It is good to be back. And on my left, we have the flying focus that, of course, in the passenger seat was Trevor Agnew. Hello, Trevor Agnew.
Hello, everybody. How are you?
I think we're all good. I think we've managed probably now to come down from a very, 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 very exciting Monte Carlo. Now, I'm trying to decide the best way to do this, boys. I don't know whether to do it through teams, because as I always say, we always know the results at this point. We take it for as read that everybody listens to the podcast knows who's won and everything else. So I don't know. Do you agree? Do you think we should do this by teams? We'll do this by votes, boys. Do you think we should do this by teams?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Jack. As the other two were still scratching the plums.
Well, the alternative is drivers. That could take a while, but.
That could take a while. I'll be honest with you. I'm going to go out there. I'm not going to go the obvious place, which would be M Sport, of course, with Sebastian Ogier winning. I want to start with Citroën. And just Citroën, I just don't know. Discuss, boys.
I don't think anybody knows, do they? Because we spent all rally thinking what's going on with the Citroën. It looks off the pace again. Drivers are talking about not being comfortable, albeit Breen less so than Meek. And then suddenly Meek bangs that in on the power stage. I mean, did anybody else see that coming? Because I definitely didn't.
No. Trev?
No, I didn't see it coming. I thought Craig was quite comfortable early on the rally. He certainly was enthusiastic about the setup. And then because of a couple of things, he was in the wrong route position, so that battered his rally. I just don't know about the Chris Meek attack on the last stage. If you listen to what he said at the end of it, I think he drove the rally quite sensibly. But maybe the last stage was the old Chris coming back again. They got away with it. I don't know. He certainly seemed to be alluding to the fact that he was pushing too hard on the last and harder than he should have been. And he came away with third place points, which was great. Well, I have a big concern about that car because he was 3 minutes. If you look at, he lost a minute and 40 seconds in the first stage. He ended up something like 4 minutes and 40 seconds off the lead. So there's 3 minutes of leak there. He did have a couple of overshoots and into snowbanks and things like that. But as a tarmac car, and there's a lot of tarmac there without the snow and without the ice, you would have expected that car, Chris Meek, to be faster on the rally. So, you know, we've seen this with Chris. If he's not on the pace at the start of the rally, sometimes he does switch off a little bit. But I'm just concerned about that car going forward.
Jack, we've all done stage end and reporting and various jobs that we've done and everything else. Again, you know, stage, I seem to remember regroup where Chris was grabbed, I think, by WRC Live. And we're going to talk about WRC Live. Of course we are. But it just, you know, Chris was talking, of course, about, you know, ground zero, this is it, you know, it's a fresh start. And it definitely felt like we were kind of back in 2017. You know, he just looked downtrodden again, didn't he?
Yeah, but I think for me, it's too early to hit the panic button for Citroën because, you know, Monte Carlo is one of the most specialist rallies we have on the whole calendar. And to write Citroën off now for me would be a bit silly, really. I think looking at the rest of the year and what we've got coming up, that's not my opinion. I think it's very, very soon to kind of rule them out for a championship charge, especially when
I don't think anybody's ruling them out. I just think we're all a little bit bemused.
Yeah,
I think that's fair comment, Jack.
But it's not a new car though. You can't, you know, what we're expecting to come with what we were expecting them to come with in Monte Carlo that was going to be so different to what we've seen before, I guess, would be what I would say back to that.
But I think if you if you look at Chris, I think there's two things, isn't it? He had the problem early on. Got stuck in the ditch, and then it was as if he made a conscious effort to reset at that point and say, right, I'm just going to drive sensibly and drive for points. But then he seemed to drop back very quickly, and that's the problem, isn't it? If you're not at 10 tenths, then you do drop back quickly. And I think that's maybe where some of that time ebbed away very quickly. But I think what we also saw was that the Citroën wasn't working in relatively low grip situations. And that's been an ongoing thing with Citroën over the last few years. When they need traction, they do seem to lack it. You know, they definitely seem to struggle more than the competition in low grip situations. And I think that's what we saw through the event. And then obviously as the drivers talked about, you know, they said the last day would suit them, but one of those stages was still very slippery. The last stage of the rally, the power stage, was obviously pretty dry, and the car clearly performed very well. I think Breen would have been quick on the stage as well had he not had the stall. But I think like Trevor alluded to before, you know, Chris said he had to put everything on the line on the last stage to try and keep his place. But wow, I mean, it was some time power stage win, and actually he comes away with a, you know, solid third in the championship.
Trev, again, going from the other side, you know, I've just said to Jack that, you know, Chris did seem a little bit down. Do you think it was a case of hitting the reset button? You know more about this stuff than us.
Yeah. Well, I think Chris Meek has watched a couple of interviews of him over the winter time, and he has admitted to last year overdriving when he should have been winding his neck back in a little bit, I suppose, the way Craig was doing. And he's taken that learning on board, I think, and we saw that for most of the rally, but I was just concerned at the end as to where did that pace come from, or why did he decide for the power stage he was going to have a go to get 5 points. Why not just settle for the points that he had in the position where he was? But, you know, that's a different thing altogether. I'm certainly not writing them off, Jack. In comparison to the other teams, though, I think they need to up their game a little bit. The upgrades that I understand are going on that car aren't on it yet, and it'll take a little while for them to go on to both cars or three cars when they come. You take Sweden as well, for example. Last year they went to Sweden and they had a completely wrong setup. They basically made a mistake with the setup, I think, maybe in the differentials. So the data that they pulled from Sweden last year, I don't know it's going to be that much use for them. So let's see how they get on that rally. And hopefully they'll turn it around, because, you know, there's plenty of people in there that have got the right engineer nous to do that. And with a new team manager, maybe they'll get it sorted quicker than I'm thinking.
That's where I was going to go to with you as well, Jack, just before we go on to the new team manager, because, you know, Craig kind of had to buckle down. You know, Craig was, I think everybody went off at some point. And obviously, Craig had his moments as well, and he wasn't happy with his performance either.
Craig? No, he wasn't. He was a bit of an up-and-down rally for him, wasn't it? But showed signs of good pace, and, you know, I think someone mentioned before, you know, he would have been there or thereabouts on the power stage about his stall as well. I think that power stage looked to me a lot drier than the rest of the rally, and I think that's where the time came for the Citroën. We've already, you know, discussed the pros and cons of the Citroën at great length over the past year, haven't we? It seems to be very good on sealed surfaces, or, you know, like we saw in Corsica and Spain, it was very good there on tarmac as well. The trickier surfaces like we see Monte Carlo obviously struggles a little bit more there, so kind of a repeat of last year. But yeah, Craig looked good when he could push, but had so many problems, like the brake problem Friday morning, I think that was, that kind of ruined his morning completely, and then he spent Saturday sweeping the road, so there was really no chance for him to really gain any sort of position in the overall leaderboard. But good signs of pace on stage times.
Guys, before we move away from Citroën, obviously, Trev just mentioned that obviously new boss, now Yves Maton's moved on, of course, to his FIA role. Do you think, we know Yves Maton was a massive supporter of Chris, and obviously supported Craig as well, obviously coming through the whole kind of Peugeot route, very similar routes when you think about it, really. What both Craig and Chris ended up with Citroën. You know, are we expecting big changes with the new management?
Well, I don't. The honest answer is to that, I don't think we know just yet. I mean, like you said, Pierre Budau's come in instead of Yves Maton, and you know, it's an interesting time as well for Maton to leave, isn't it? And I think what we saw last year was the Citroen management, the Citroen board taking more and more involvement in the rally team and actually, you know, taking away seemingly some of the decisions from Yves Matton. So, you know, I hope that isn't the case, and I hope the rally team are just left to their own devices, because nobody knows how to operate a rally team better than those within it. And we have seen it in the past where, you know, senior company management get involved in running not just a rally team, but maybe in a Formula One team a couple of times in the past, and it doesn't work too well. So let's hope the rally team are left to their own devices this year.
Yeah. What was I going to say to you? Now, Jack, I don't want to move away too much yet from Citroen, but of course Mats Osberg is in the third car now for Sweden. Obviously Trev was talking about it before. Do we think this is a bit of a masterstroke? Trev obviously mentioned, you know, the Adam nightmare with diff settings and things like that. Do you think Mads coming in, do you think that's all part of them trying to find a setup?
Mads got a lot of experience on that surface, so, you know, it doesn't hurt to have a bit of feedback from some decent drivers, does it? So yeah, I don't think it's a bad move, and I think it's probably, you know, it's something probably they thought out. My confusion is I'm not really sure what Citroën are actually trying to achieve in the WRC this year, because they're not going to have three cars for the whole season. I think they're going to struggle to match Hyundai and Toyota, aren't they? Especially, and Ford to a certain extent as well, in terms of, you know, three cars challenging for top points in every round. So for me, it's just as much as we've seen a lot of problems with the car and things like that, for me, it's just a clear lack of direction in terms of what they're actually trying to achieve.
I agree with that. It's a confusing thing for me. Well, there's a couple of other things as well. We've seen a few people talk about the budget restraints and maybe the budget being cut back for 2018, but yet they arrive in Monte Carlo, a massive big hospitality unit. I hadn't seen that coming or that before. The other thing is regards the driver setup. You're right. As a team that wants to win the manufacturer's title, it just doesn't make a lot of sense sometimes. And even bringing Lubin, it's going to be great. Some rallies. Certainly, you think of Spain towards the end of the year. If it stays dry, he's going to have a good road position in the gravel on the first day. Mexico, they won there last year. But again, getting into one of these cars and everybody else around you has been used to them for a year and a bit, it's not that easy. They're not going to have loads of testing. And so for him to get up to speed, it's going to be a bit of a challenge. And I don't think he might be surprised at the pace that there's in. These youngs are coming through, especially in the WRC now. So that could be an issue, definitely.
Right. We've just the same point, really, what I've just put to Jack. Do you see the appointment at least getting Mads in the car for Sweden? Obviously, Mads is doing a lot of snow and ice stuff at the moment. I think he's obviously renting out his Focus, he's renting out his Fiesta. Obviously, maybe that's bringing budget into the Citroen situation. I really, really don't know about that, but Do you think it's a bit of clever manoeuvrement of getting somebody in from, you know, who's got a great deal of experience over there?
A little bit like Trev. I just think that the whole philosophy of Citroën is a little bit strange in that it just doesn't seem cohesive. You know, are they going for the manufacturers' championship? You know, I saw an interview over the weekend where it makes it difficult for us only having two cars. So why have you only got two cars? Is it a budget thing? Presumably. Like Trevor said, incredible new motorhome, whether that was from the World Touring Car program, I guess possibly. But and if anybody knows the answer to that, by all means, tweet us in and say, have we seen that Citroen hospitality unit before? But, you know, so running two cars there, then Mats Osberg comes in. I think there will be some money probably coming, changing hands for that deal. But definitely, you know, he does bring relevant experience from ice and snow. But how much testing is he going to get? How many changes can he actually make? You know, we've seen Loeb drive the car. We've seen, you know, seen me and Bree trying to improve the car, and it seems improvements are slow. So there's probably a limit to how much he can actually do when he comes into the team. And then, as Trevor's already said, you know, Craig's going to be subbed out for Loeb to come in. And yet, when Khalid Al-Qassimi comes on board, there's an extra car. Now, obviously, he's funding a big part of the programme, but it does seem a little bit of a mismatch at the minute as to what they are trying to achieve. And like I said, let's just hope that there is good focus behind Chris, who is there all year, and let's hope they do make some improvements with the car. But, you know, I have to say, I was hoping to see the car be competitive all rally, and it does seem there's still things that aren't quite as Chris wants with that car.
Anyway, boys, moving on from Citroën, one team that is going to field the same three drivers throughout the season, of course, Toyota, and you know, they were. Is it cruelly to say that they were robbed of a two-three-four? Obviously, last power stage issues for. Do you know what? His mind's gone out. My mind's gone blank. You're Lappy. I know. Yeah, God, I know. That's the one I normally get shouted at about as well, about how I pronounce his name. From Lappy. Obviously, it would have been a 2-3-4, but you know, outstanding performance, right? From Toyota. Obviously, Tanak just seems to have just taken to that car. Apparently, I read somewhere 4 days testing only or something like that. I don't know, but duck to water.
Yeah, absolutely. And he seemed very at home with it. He was very happy, wasn't he? You know, we're seeing a more animated driver now in Oit Tanak. And that's great to see. You know, he's turning into a little bit of a character from the quiet Estonian he used to be. So that's great. And he seems to be very at home in the team. Latvala was quite content to play second fiddle to him. I think Latvala was quite happy with his podium as well. And yeah, okay, I mean, it was unfortunate that Lappi lost the fourth place, but I mean, ultimately, it didn't cost them any manufacturers' points. They still had the two cars in second and third, still two on the podium. And Lappi, you know, great drive by him. He looked to have got that place on speed, and obviously he was caught out on the gravel on the last stage, as Latvala nearly was as well. But you know, Toyota team still going forward, and with Tanak in that team, you know, they're going to be very, very strong throughout the year, I think.
Trev, again, we've just been talking about cohesion and moving forward and everything. And of course, Toyota was probably one of the ones that, when it was first announced, the kind of Gazoo Racing, and then it was going to be Tommi Mäkinen Racing, they were going to be working together. That was the one that had the big question mark about, how is this really going to work? But it's kind of, dare I say, last season, they gently got, obviously, you know, Hänninen was going to be the man who was always going to make way, I think, come the midway point of the season. But definitely now, probably on paper, the strongest team for me.
Yeah, there was nothing gentle about Sweden last year, was there? And together with, I suppose, half of motorsport, were eating a lot of humble pie after that one. Definitely didn't see that coming. But the one thing I think the Ari Matti needs to look out for this year, I think he's another Seb Ogier in this team with Tanak. Tanak is completely on his game at the minute, and he has been. The last big mistake that I remember making was in Portugal last year. He has turned the corner. He's a lot more consistent now. He seems to be driving his head and pace straight away. And even when he got into the car for the first time, I saw him at the Autosport show, and he said as soon as he got in the car, I knew it was the right decision. So he's confident. He's relaxed in the team. It's hilarious to see Ari Matti try to wind him up and tell him that he was coming into a team that was established and he was the team leader. So I wouldn't have listened much to that. And it's clear that Ari Matti, in particular, with his work cut out. Lappi drove great. Again, he just beats himself up so much. But he has a good pedigree in tarmac. You know, a lot of people forget that he won the Circuit of Ireland, which is traditionally a really hard rally to win on his first attempt in RRC. So, yeah, he can be quick on most surfaces. He just needs to settle into it a little bit more and not want to win every stage and every rally.
Jack, are you having what I've just said? Are you having that Toyota are probably the strongest team this season?
I think they've got the strongest driver lineup for sure. I think those three on their day are going to be very tough to beat. You know, Lappi's probably the weak point in the three, you would say, but that's only because he's not done all the rallies in the year. So on the rallies that he's returning to, he's going to be right there with Tanak and Latvala, as far as I'm concerned. Whether the car is going to be quick enough to beat the likes of Hyundai, Citroën and Ford on all the rounds, that's yet to be seen. Like I said earlier, we've only had one round, and I think it's very, very soon to sort of start judging where everyone's at. But it looks like Toyota have taken a little bit of a step forward from where we were at in Monty last year. But already, you know, Monty last year, Toyota, we weren't expecting anything from them then, were we? So they look like they've taken a little bit of a step forward from what we've seen in Monty. what we can see is that Tanak has hit the ground running and taken absolutely no time to bed into his car whatsoever. So the three of those are going to be incredibly strong when it comes to Sweden in an event they won last year, don't forget.
Some great images, of course, as well from Monty, where certain parts of the Toyota were used like an IKEA cabinet, which I think is good. I think you should have those things where you can put cups outside of cars and eat food on the rear wings. I think that's important. I think every World Rally car should have a part of it that you should allow to wine and dine off. There you go. Right, before we move on from Toyota, a couple of things that, again, Trev, we look at teams all the time, and we've just been talking, obviously, about Citroën. Obviously, we know what goes on at M Sport. We know, obviously, Malcolm Stacher in the sport as well, and obviously, Michel Nandan, obviously, an experience. Obviously, Tommy Mäkinen. Now, people were wary of the fact that Tommy was so very, very hands-on. He was doing a lot of the testing and things like that, but he looks like he has such a good relationship with all his drivers. Is this a case of the drivers automatically warm to him because of his experience, you know, his world championships? You know, he's gone out and done it, and he's not asking to do anything that he hasn't done himself.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a couple of comments before Monte Carlo. Of course, Tommy, for Finn in particular, was exemplary in Monte Carlo. He's won it four times. And somebody had asked him, were you able to get driver's hips? And he said, no, I'm far behind him. He says, the level of preparation I did, I went skiing in the time, it was it. He says, whereas these guys, the level of preparation they put into it, now all the in-cars and everything else that they do, is taken to a whole new level. It's an interesting thing with Toyota side of things. Jarmo Leitinen's left the team. Kyle Lindstrom is gone now. I think there can be a little bit of friction sometimes within the team. I think a few people have left. Because Tommy is quite clear in what he wants done, and maybe the way he delivers his messages sometimes don't get received in the way they should. But certainly Kai has got a lot of patience. He's a good guy. He knows how to look after people. So it will it'll only strengthen that team, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hyundai boys, where do we start with Hyundai? Who wants to take this one?
Jack.
Go on then.
Jack Benyon. Go on, you take Hyundai for me, young man.
Well, on that event, it looks like the same as last year, doesn't it? Thierry Neuville will be blistering the quick, but not be able to put a whole rally together. And obviously went off on the first stage and couldn't really recover so much from that. Although, you know, his fifth place finish was pretty impressive given what had happened on the first day. And then Mikkelsen, we saw, had a problem as well, which I've heard different things about afterwards. I don't think it was actually an alternator failure. I think it was something got caught in the engine and wrapped something around a pipe or something that went to the alternator. So I don't think it was actually like a technical failure. And anyone sort of saying, you know, linking back to last year where Honda had some reliability problems at times, I don't think this is one of those things. I think it's just a bit of a freak sort of incident that happened. But Andreas and Thierry, both very, very quick. Danny as well before his crash, so pace is clearly still there for Hyundai, and no different to last year in that sense. What was similar to last year is that they just couldn't manage to put anything together over the course of the event, and that's where you've got the sort of, you know, if you look at last year, OJ only won two events. It's not all about winning the rally; it's about taking the points to back to your base and working on it. And that's something that Hyundai really are going to have to do this year, and that we're going to have to keep an eye on that closely over the course of the season.
Trev, I want to come to you about Thierry before we go any further. It was one of those moments. Are we going, I know it's a very obvious one because it was cold, but are we going cold tyres, cold brakes? You know, it seemed, you know, everybody seemed to have issues. Don't get me wrong. Everybody pinged off somewhere. Was it just a little bit unlucky? Whereas when Seb went off on Saturday, for instance, and ended up in a ditch, he was there for 30 seconds and there was plenty of people to get him out. Was this just one of those moments where it was just purely unlucky?
Yeah, he seemed to pull the handbrake, he said, on the all four wheels locked, which isn't what you'd want to happen. You'd think that the back would move a little bit and you could rotate the car, and on the back of that he went into the ditch and he didn't get away with it. A lot of other people did, and on the back of that then it just destroys his rally. And you don't have the motivation then that you would have if you're fighting for the lead. So as Monty. But to come back to the whole luck side of things, and again, you hear a lot of people talking about Seb Ogier being lucky. Two incidents in this rally, he spun on the first stage. The other time when he, maddest thing ever, he drove into a ditch that he didn't need to do and got away with it. 30-second loss there. But his time on stage 9 on the morning was just brilliant, you know, compared to everybody else. And then Mickelson even beat him. But in those situations where he's under a bit of pressure, he just seems to pull it out. And all of this luck thing, you don't win Monte Carlo 5 years if you're just lucky. I just don't believe it is luck.
Except when he drove into that ditch, because that was lucky that he got back out of there.
Yeah, but it was stupid as well, right?
Yeah, but you could see what happened. And unfortunately, Chris Meek had a similar incident, and Chris didn't get away with it quite so easy. But you could see what happened. He went in first gear, thought, I can get around there. That doesn't look like a ditch, and of course it was.
Yeah. Right, I want to come to you. Obviously, Danny was blistering. He was on the pace. He was on the podium. It just looked like one of those moments. It was a split second moment. I don't know whether he locked up or whatever, but you know, rally over.
Yeah, and Danny Sordo, you know, Mr. Reliable, the man you expect to get a result, and you know, I think he'd even gone out and he'd even said, hadn't he, that morning, I'm not going to go out and set the world alight. But like you said, it's just a case of getting half a wheel wrong, getting it on the snow, and then it doesn't come back again. You know, we saw Bouffier and Lappy get away with mistakes towards the end of the rally that you know could have cost them either a lot of time or put them out of the rally completely. And that's the thing with Monte Carlo. You know, it can so easily all go wrong. It was a tough rally for Hyundai. Definitely, as we've already said, the pace of the car looked superb. But they didn't get a result. I think what I'll remember about Hyundai's Monte Carlo rally, though, is the look on Thierry Neuville's face when he realised Chris Meek had beat him on the power stage, because that was priceless.
Right, boys, you know where we end up now. We, of course, are going to go to M Sport Ford or Ford M Sport. Which way round do we do it, Jack? Is it Ford M Sport or M Sport Ford?
I think it's M Sport Ford, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. We've just been talking about him, of course. I seen a stat, boys, on Twitter, of course, and I gave props to Gary Boyd. The man's just a machine. It's just a machine how he just generates all this stuff. But I seen something that he put out, and I kind of half read it, and it half went in. So by all means, put me straight. Something like, Ogier has now won more stages in 2018 than what he won in the whole of 2017.
I think he said he was leading more.
Leading more,
he's
right.
He's definitely
okay.
Not won more stages.
Yeah, it's just about to say.
I think he won 30 or 20 odd, didn't he, in 2016, so there wasn't that many stages on the rally, so that's definitely not okay.
Yeah, I knew there was something like that. Trev's just put me straight, so I knew one of the three would love to put me straight, but yeah, I knew I'd seen something like that, you know, again, that consistency, of course, from Seb, and I suppose for Malcolm, and I suppose with what happened with Elvin, you know, Elvin, did we put Elvin down as being unlucky, Jack?
Elvin's a tough one. I think we expected a lot of him, didn't we, with him being on the Michelin, same tie as everybody else, and in the same team as Sebastian Ogier. He's even got the same livery this year, so there was a lot of expectation. Obviously, very unlucky to be changing that puncture, and you know that must have been a real sort of, you know, a bit of a knock to the old confidence getting that on the first stage. It must have been like he was, you know, starting afresh this year with a new chance to really prove himself. And on the first stage, he has to stop and change a puncture, but he fought back well and won a few stages. He was very, very rarely outside of the top six in stage times over the course of the weekend. Yes, you would have liked to have seen him push on maybe a little bit more and just show a little bit more of. Maybe a little bit more consistency over, I think it was Saturday especially, where he was eighth and a little bit further down at certain points. But it's very difficult to criticise him after that event. Very, very tough event. And I thought he bounced back well after the puncture thing and did well to win some stages as well.
Right. I think it's hard to disagree with that, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Elvin generally, he had a terrible start to the rally, did well, was solid throughout, and I think he'll learn a lot from it. He's obviously not still got a lot of experience of Monte Carlo, or less experience than some of the other drivers, and I'm sure he'll take solid points from it and move on.
Trev, obviously Malcolm's already come out and said how tough it's going to be because everybody is going to raise the game. Of course, he's looking around, he's looking at all the teams. There is rally winners now pretty much in all the teams other than Craig Breen, unfortunately. Hopefully that'll be put right this year. But he's looking around. Obviously, Oit's gone. He's looking at he's looking at Elvin to perhaps take that step up. Do you think that's another pressure point again for Elvin now? Is that again? Is he loading it on him like he did in order to get him to raise his game last time?
No, I don't think he is. Elvin's a class act, and he's proved that last year. I mentioned towards the end of last year, one of the podcasts, I vaguely remember, maybe I'm doing a disservice, but I seem to remember in 2015, the last time he was teamed with Tanak, and he was getting the odd puncture here and there, which, you know, more so than the other drivers, maybe running wide, nipping a tire off a wheel. So if he can sort that out and it doesn't happen, then he's quick on every surface. He just didn't seem to be on top of the car. He's getting a bit of understeer, and that's unusual to hear him and talking those terms, you know. If you watch any in-car with Elvin, he's rare that he's close to spinning. He's a bit like Martin Rowe in that respect. His car control's phenomenal. So I think when he gets to Sweden on a different surface, he'd just get Monte Carlo out of the way. He made that mistake early on. Same as we spoke up before. It's hard to get the motivation. You don't want to do anything silly. So, yeah, we'll park that one and start again in Sweden, and he'd be right back on it, he will.
Right. The last driver, of course, Brian Bouffier. Now, I'm going to ask a co-driver first, and I'm going to say to Trevor Agnew, you get bussed in pretty much 24 hours before the rally starts. You get handed somebody else's race suit. You've got your lid with you. You've got to borrow a set of skiddies from someone. You've got to borrow a pair of boots from someone, and you get handed somebody else's pace notes. How hard is that?
The hardest thing is not having done the recce, so not actually seeing the stages, even though Javier Panseri would know the stage, you'd be familiar with. But there was a lot of new stuff, I think, this year. It's far from ideal, but no better man for the job. He seemed to just carry on doing it. And I think they had a few road sections where they were able to watch, or sorry, trips down to Monaco and back up again, where they were able to watch videos and crack on. The first thing you do, obviously, is rewrite in your own handwriting, get pace notes so you can actually read them. And then it's a case of just doing what you can do. And I don't think it affected the performance in the weekend. I think Brian was just surprised at the pace. You know, his pace notes just weren't fast enough for that car. They were too fast for that car, I should say. So where he was flat, you know, he couldn't really, he just misread on the recce the speed that he could go on the rally car, I think.
Right, I don't know whether you've ever had a last minute change like that, but, you know, Brian's obviously worked with Javier before. Are you with Trev on this? It hasn't really affected the result too much for him?
No, not at all. I mean, that's, you know, that's one thing about a professional co-driver, really. If they're good at what they do, then you know, yes, there's certain things change in the car, but as long as the notes are coming when you want them, then you just get on and drive accordingly. And, you know, and a good co-driver is able to jump in and do that. And in some ways, maybe the last minute change is harder for the co-driver than it is for the driver, as long as, like I said, delivering the notes on time. And I think Bouffier did a solid job. He's obviously he knows Monte Carlo very, very well, but as Trev said, you know, he wasn't quite on the pace. He hasn't got as much experience of that car or anything like the experience of that car as the others have, and they're in them regularly. And I think that probably showed in the difference in pace.
Jack, have you ever had the last minute co-driver change?
Very good. No, I haven't.
Well, what else was going to come to you with, Jack? Come on, give me a break.
I thought something else I didn't say about Elvin. On the go first stage, you lost 3 minutes and 48 seconds. So if you'd have took that, and yeah, in a rally, you can never sort of just take that away and say that would have been the result, because obviously
you can. We all do it. We all do it at the end of every rally.
Yeah, we all do it.
Yes, you drivers might do it, of course. Actually, analysing the event, yeah, don't do it. But Elvin would have been around Tanak for second if you take that 3 minutes 48.
So you analysing the rally, don't do it, but you just did.
No, I don't. No, I'd never do.
We just did.
That's assuming
that the same way would have been. God, got it.
Stop bullying.
Yeah, you've got
Ryan.
It in me today, Ryan. I'm not having this.
Sorry, I'll pipe down.
Do you know what? It's all about the Christmas stages.
That's what it is.
That's where it all stems from. That it all stems from that. There's a frustration there, Jack. You need to talk about this, right? You do. You need to talk it through. Boys, we've obviously worked our way through. I wanted to kind of doff my cap to a couple of other bits and pieces, of course, that happened on Monte Carlo. Jan Kopecky, you know, he just went out and did what Jan Kopecky does. I think he had to drive a 50% for, I think he said for the last couple of days of the rally because it was a kind of foregone conclusion. Cali Rovanperä, not registered for WRC2. I was very, very impressed with his 11th place, boys.
Yep.
Anyone can take this. Anyone. Jack's unconvinced.
Yeah. Yeah. He finished 5 minutes behind Jan Kopecky. And
yeah.
Yes, fair enough, it's his first Monty in an R5 car and tarmac isn't his best surface. But with all due respect to Jan Kopecky, if you go back to last year when, for example, Andreas Mikkelsen was doing Monte Carlo, I think he would have finished a little bit further up the road than Jan Kopecky. So if Cali's aiming to be WRC2 champion, you know, maybe it's a little bit soon, but that's kind of what he's aiming at. And you know, I thought he might be a little bit closer to Jan on this one.
Ryan Champion, I think Jack Beng is being harsh. I think he's taking out his frustration about you on Cali Rovanperä.
I'm not saying it's not a good performance. I just thought he might be a little bit closer to someone like Jan. I think Jan's kind of where Cali should be at straight away. And
wow.
Yeah, but, you know, Kopecky is a class act, and he did what he had to do on that rally and made no mistakes when he had no pressure, and I think he did a good job. And I think you know, if Rovanperä had been faster but gone off the road, we'd have all said, well, he should have gone a bit slower and got the experience. So, you know, he's got to the end of the rally. He's got to the end of the rally in a very strong position. So, no, I think he did a pretty good job, because I'm sure he would be under fairly strict instructions somewhere along the line to finish the rally and get all the experience he can.
And with Ryan Champion, where's Trevor Agnew going to place his catch?
if I was advising Cali Rovanperä, I certainly would want him to get to the end of the rally to get as much experience as possible. It's not the rally where you're going to show your speed. There's plenty of them left in the year. He's got loads of time to do all of that. Get round, get the experience and learn for the next time you go back.
There you go. One other thing, which it could have been nearly in any other business. It's not going to be in any other business. I know it's something that Ryan Champion is quite passionate about as well. I'm going to talk about the RGT section for a split second, because I don't care what anybody says, a Fiat 124 is not an RGT.
It's an unlike RGT car, isn't it?
I've got nothing else to say about it. And this is no disrespect to anyone who's doing the right. I'd love to do Monte Carlo, and I'd do it in a Fiat 1-2. I'd do it in a Fiat Scuderia, right? But the fact is, that is not a GT car. I'm sorry. It should... No.
I've seen one compete last year, and watching it out on stages, it was good to watch, but it didn't get me anywhere near as excited as you like the V8 911 would.
Let me tell you, Jack Bennion, right? Let me tell you,
yep.
Right?
Come on, pile it on. What are you going to disagree with?
Last time I was at... No, sit down, right? Last time I went to Monte Carlo 3 years ago, and it's when Delacour was in the Tuttle Porsche. And when I was sat on those stages and that Porsche went past, that was a GT car, yeah, my friend.
Agreed.
There you go. Trev, you got anything you want to add about GT cars?
Which one do you have a problem with? The Alpha? Was it?
Yes. Yeah, the Fiat 124 R Bath Rally GT. It's a Mazda.
Yeah,
it's a Mazda.
It's a road
anyway.
Car. It's basically an MX-5, isn't it? Underneath.
Yeah.
I'm sure it set a top 10 time somewhere.
Yeah, it was fourth on one of the stages.
Look, I don't care. You can prove anything with facts.
Yeah, there's no point talking about that.
Bottom line is, I don't think any of us disagree, Tony. It's not a GT car.
Okay, that's a GT class. That's all right then. A couple of other bits and pieces before we get to our any other business, because believe it or not, we're now nearly 40 minutes into this particular podcast. Ryan Champion, you've been playing on snow and ice, and you put out a nice little nice little video of one Marcus Grönholm in a polo. How close did you get to Marcus? Did you touch him?
Well, I didn't physically go up and touch him, but was having a wander around the workshop when he was in there on the morning, having his seat fit and everything else. I was with Terry Kirby, and Terry knows Marcus pretty well, so we did have a brief chat with him on the morning. He seemed to enjoy the experience, and then he was followed the day after by Petter Solberg driving the car. So they're pushing hard with the Polo R5 development. I believe there's a test every 2 weeks from now on until the car's homologated. They're really putting some serious effort into getting that car to the level that we'd expect from Volkswagen Motorsport. And Hyundai are currently testing on the same road as we speak.
Well, with that Hyundai R5?
A bit of both. I think they've got 3 days with the WRC car and 2 days with the R5 car.
And they're tarmac testing in Ireland today. There you go. Just thought I'd add that. Boys, we're at the any other business section, unless anybody else has got anything else they want to get off the chest before we move to the any other business.
We've not spoken about OJ.
No, I thought I'd missed that bit,
No, do you know what? Right. I kind of purposely stayed away from it because apart from the fact that we've made reference to him several times, it's just a given. It was just a masterful performance by our best driver that we've got in WRC at the moment. But
you forgot.
I didn't forget, Trev. I knew you were going to say that. I give our listeners credit the fact that we all know what Ogier did, and it was exceptional. But we have made reference to the fact that I thought he was a little bit lucky, and of course you put me straight on that, Trev. But Jack, you talk to me about Sebastian Ogier.
Well, he's brilliant, wasn't he? So that's all that needs to be said, and you can move on.
Ryan Champion?
Class act, as ever. In some ways, we've mentioned it already earlier in the podcast, but it could have been a flashback to the 2017 season a few times, couldn't it? I mean, Ogier, all right, yes, he made a couple of mistakes, as did everybody in those conditions, but he was incredibly fast when he needed to be. He controlled the play, the pace when he needed to do that as well, and you know, victory number six,
Trevor,
not five, as people keep saying.
Yeah, Trevor Agnew.
I thought Julian Ingrassia was fantastic.
Good lad. I knew Trevor coming from a slightly different angle. Thank you. Thank you for not being predictable. Right, boys, have you all got in any other business for this week?
Yep. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Jack, did you say yes?
I did, yes.
Okay, cool. I'm going to leave mine till the end. So we're going to go with Jack Benyon's first.
Mine's a bit of a sad one.
Okay, I think we might be on the same page, but okay.
Dougie Hughes, unfortunately, passed away last weekend. Is that what you're going to go with?
Yeah, absolutely, really? Of course. How could you not?
I'm sure there's better people on this podcast to speak about this than me, but I've heard his voice many, many times on many videos and many different commentaries that he's done. And I just, you know, it's always very sad when they're kind of like your voices, aren't they, of periods of your life. I always remember people like Steve Ryder doing lots of PRC videos back in the day and things like that. And they're kind of people who sort of carry with you, aren't they, over the years, as much as maybe not their face, but they're, you know, you hear their voice once and you immediately know it's them, and takes you back to a different time in life. And yeah, I just thought it was very sad that Dougie had passed away, and wishing all his family and friends the best at a very difficult time.
Right, you must have encountered Dougie as well. I think I've still got loads of Irish videos, VHS tapes and stuff like that when I used to record so much stuff and everything else. But did you experience him firsthand? Did he when you were over there?
Yeah, absolutely. Bumped into him on a number of occasions. But like you said, he's got one of those iconic voices in motorsport, you know, in Irish rallying, and a sad loss, and you know, done an amazing job for the sport over the years.
Trev, obviously from your neck of the woods, probably on more rallies than I care to probably name that you've experienced him. Just your thoughts.
Yeah, over 60 years, Tony. He's been doing it, the mobile commentary side of things, and most racing, Mondello Park, but rally in particular, any rally you went to, Dougie was there. If you're number one or you're number 151, he knew you. He had plenty of time for you. He always talked about every sponsor on the car to the crowd. So, and I just, you know, it's sad, obviously, for the family, and there's going to be a huge funeral tomorrow, I think. It's going to be a packed church there, but I just smile when I think of Dougie, and I think that's the way he would like us to remember him.
Great words, guys. Great words. Jack, have you got anything else you want to get off your chest? Or
do you know what? It's been so long since we did the last podcast. I'm trying to go through my head and think of all the things that have happened.
You don't have to. You don't have to. You don't have to. Honestly,
anyway, so
we're back. We're back for another 10 weeks. Yeah. So don't worry about that. Ryan Champion.
A couple of things. Topical for Rally Monte Carlo, but a lot of people probably watched the coverage of the weekend. All live. Are you coming to All Live in a little while, by the way? You'd say you would. Are you coming back to that?
Kind of, yeah. No, it's okay. You can do All Live.
No,
don't worry.
I have a comment to make on it, which I'll come back to when you get that far. But a lot of people listening probably watched the footage over the weekend. Great job, I think, for the first time. But a lot of times during the event, the drivers were talking about their safety crews, their gravel knot crews, their ice knot crews, whatever they were calling them. And obviously, they're all actually the same thing. But I just thought I'd go into a little bit more detail about the job that the ice knot crew, gravel knot crew, safety knot crew, as they're now officially called, that they actually do.
Knot crew, if you go in the regulations, that's the official
term. Those as well. Those as well, you see. Anyway, still a gravel crew or an ice crew. But each of the manufacturer entries has a driver and co-driver going through the stages in a recce car about an hour before the stage actually runs live, and it's a job that I've been dragged into a few times. I'm sure Trevor has as well, and particularly for Monte Carlo, it is vital to the top crews, because the latest conditions in terms of ice is critical for both tyre choice, but also for staying on the road, and very much unsung heroes. Although, like I said, a number of drivers did thank their ice knot, gravel knot, safety, route knot crews over the weekend, because they're up at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, they're running through the stages in the pitch black. Quite often they're finished their job by mid-morning when everybody else is only just getting started, and it is a tough job to get right, and it can be the difference between winning and losing the rally as well.
There you go. Trevor Agnew?
I did gravel notes for Colin McRae in the Ulster Rally. It must have been 90 or 91. And I remember on that occasion, there was two different times we had to change left to a right or a right to a left. Can't remember which way around, but it was two different times. I don't think it would have slowed them or changed much at all. But yeah, it's a bit of a high-pressure situation. You'll get the thanks you get for it. The all-live side of things, I was very, very impressed with what went on there. Huge technical challenge to do all of that. A little bit of experience of doing it on a smaller scale. But I think as a first attempt, given the location and the issues around the weather, it was fantastic. Too good, in fact, for me, because as I said in a tweet, it's a case of looking for a divorce lawyer if you keep watching it.
I did see that. I thought it was brilliant. Just for me, the all live thing. It was amazing. And I can remember, you know, night sitting back and just put it on my phone, put it on the big screen, convert to the TV, and just lay in bed watching it. And I had Jimmy the boy sat on my knee, and I was like, this is as good as it gets. This is the possibly the greatest period. And I did put a tweet out about this the other day. This is possibly the greatest period to watch rallying now. I don't think we're ever, it's never going to get this good unless we get to virtual reality where we're sat in the spare wheel well, which I'm sure will come eventually. But I don't think we're ever going to be, it can't get much better than this. Obviously, I know they had technical issues. I think everybody who worked on it, the stage end guys, obviously guys in the studio, they all played their part in keeping the thing, because we've all been there, we've all had to do things, and it is hard. It is hard. But the product and the idea is there. It's all there. And when it all does click into place 100%, and I don't think they're far away, I think it's possibly one of the greatest things that has happened to WRC in recent times. There you go.
I just want to add something on to All Live, because like you said, I think it was brilliant, and it's really opened up the WRC to a new avenue, really, and you could see things happening in a lot more detail. But a couple of competitors have been rumbling about just how much insight there is into what's going on a rally now, a bit like Big Brother watching, because let's just say sometimes on a road section things don't happen quite in line with what the FIA Road Safety Campaign might like to see, and there is some drivers a little bit concerned about All Live showing too much, shall we say.
Understandable. There you go. On both sides, of course, we've got to play both sides, haven't we? Go on.
The people around there are quite intelligent. There's a couple of occasions over it. I remember they were snooping a little bit around Oitanic when he was having a chat with his engineers. So the like of Julian and people who are seasoned at Molly Pettit, they know not to go there. It'll sort itself out, I think.
There you go. Right, boys. My any other business. I decided to do that time hop thing, which, of course, we've all been guilty of. We all have a little look on Facebook and everything else. I clicked on my, what happened on this day or whatever the app's called on Facebook. And today it came up. It was 2009. And the simple thing I put was Niall McShay, Super 2000 pace. This is the future. Of course, it was Rally Ireland. It was a very wet Rally Ireland, which I think you'll remember, Trev. And Niall absolutely battered everybody until they had a problem with an electrical connector that took in a little bit of water. But it did, at that point, I thought, wow, this is the future. Now, the thing I'm going to ask you, boys, I'll ask you, obviously, do you all remember this, by the way?
Yeah.
Cool. The thing is, I put in 2009, Super 2000, this is the future. The question I pose all of you, was I wrong or right?
Well, Super 2000 did a job for a while, didn't it? It did a pretty good job as a second division category, but I think it was very, very costly. The cars were very costly to build and very costly to run, because a lot of the components on the car were WRC type components with normally aspirated engines. So I think it was maybe a bit more expensive than planned, but nonetheless, we saw some great years in IRC and European Championship with Super 2000 cars. I think just the engines just didn't quite have enough torque to quite make the spectacle last a bit longer.
Trev?
Yeah, I think the R5 replacement is probably the right way to go down that route. The idea of the R5 was to simplify costs, so you see them uprights in each corner, etc. It probably is the right evolution. Why is it still not about? Because that type of engine, manufacturers didn't have it, potentially, was it? I'm not sure.
Chapin, last but not least. Jack Benyon's gone.
Jack.
Okay, what are your thoughts on Super 2? What was it, right or wrong?
Well, it's not the future, because it doesn't really exist anymore, does it? So,
Jack, you weren't really listening, was you, to this bit? Sure, you tuned out.
No, you said, yeah, read, out, is it the future? Does S2000 still exist as a class? No.
No, I said, was it the future in 2009?
Come on, Jack.
It's like Back to the Future.
Yeah. It was something I said in 2009, and basically the question that both Ryan and Trev have just managed to comprehend and then regurgitate their own answers to it was the fact that we were kind of time hopping. We were saying, was it right? Was it a right thing to say? So, are you on your period, Jack?
I just don't understand the question, because if you said 2009 is 2000 the future, now 2018 and it doesn't exist, then it's not the future, is it? It wasn't the future because it's gone. It's been replaced by something else.
Yeah, but
yeah, it's fine. Don't worry. No, McShay did well on that rally though, and set some good times. He beat some 1-1 on one stage, and Danny's opening and people like this. So good performance.
I did. It's, you know what, and seek out the, I think there's footage on YouTube, and all joking aside, I'm sure you've watched it, Jack. It is absolutely epic. There's a section where somebody stood on the side of the road and it just looks like a river, and Niall goes through absolutely flat on the limiter, and you just think, geez whiz. Seek it out, folks. It'll be there. Boys, this is the end of this part of the podcast for all of you. You can all stand down now. We will go to a little break, and we're going to come back with Julian Porter to probably talk about similar things that you've heard in the first part, but you're at least going to get Julian's thoughts on it as well. So there you go. We thank all our guests. We've lost Trevor Agnew. Trev's gone now, but Trev will be back with us in the not too distant future. Ryan Champion, same time, same place next week.
I'm trying to think ahead a week. You know, I do find that difficult at times. But I am around next week, so that's good. Yes, I'll be here.
Jack Benyon.
I'll be here.
Can't wait. Folks, thank you for the download. And thank you for everybody, by the way, got involved. We were always going to come back. It was just how we were going to come back. And we think we found a solution for the time being anyway. But all the people who kind of got in touch and said, you know, you're coming back. Thank you. It did make a difference, I promise you. Listen, sit back, relax. We're going to go to a little break, and then we're going to come back to Julian Porter.
You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @Absolute_Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. We've talked nonsense, of course, at the top of the programme about Monte Carlo. None of us were there. We had what you had. Basically, fantastic WRC live coverage. We had, obviously, people on social media and things like that, but we've been so excited about the WRC coverage and WRC live, of course. We thought we'd get one of the men behind it. Well, not behind it, the man at the front of it, almost. Julian Porter, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you, Tony. Yep, all good. Nice and relaxed after a hectic week in Monte Carlo.
I'm impressed you've still got a voice, I think it's fair to say, because I listen to your dulcet tones quite a bit, and obviously you were used here, there and everywhere. I can only assume you didn't sleep.
Not a lot, but to be fair, Monte, you don't get a lot of sleep on Monte anyway. You know, it's very tough. It's a long event. In some people's eyes, it's a proper event. You know what I mean? Not getting to bed till 1 o'clock in the morning and back out of it at five and things like that. So it was difficult, but hang about. Let's look at it in the real world. I was out on Rally Monte Carlo doing a great job, so it wasn't all hard work, if we're honest.
I tell you what, you know, obviously we didn't catch up from the end of last season, so we really didn't review what happened in 2017, you know, with the new cars and everything else. But I think what's interesting is, fast forward on 12 months from Monte Carlo 2017 to 2018, has much really, really changed? That sounds like an odd question.
When you look at the results board and what happened, it was a very similar story. Neuville having a problem, Ogier winning, Toyota finishing on the podium. It was the same podium, three drivers on the podium this year to last year. Obviously, Tanak in a different car. So when you look at it that way, not a lot did change, but it's so competitive. Every team won a stage. Virtually everybody went off the road on the first stage. Quite amazing, standing at the end of stage one and just hearing through the radio that I had in and of, because I was listening to the people, the director who was doing the all live. Yeah, just so you know, we've got Ogier going backwards down the road. Oh, Neuville's now in a snowbank. Evans has stopped to change a wheel. Tanak's in the bank. And I was thinking, like, how many people here are actually going to make it to the end? But what a rally. As I said to someone, it was the full Monty.
Everything. There you go. Do you know what? We should just end the podcast there. That's a line.
Yeah. Well, but it was, you know, we had the dry roads on Friday morning. We had the ice on Thursday night in the dark. The dry roads Friday morning, absolutely pouring down with rain on Friday afternoon. Full snow Saturday morning. Slushy roads Saturday afternoon. And then the bone dry roads above Monaco on Sunday. It was everything that Monte Carlo has always become famous for.
Do you know what? You recce these stages, obviously. Do you know, of the Thursday night, I was sat at home. I spoke about this at the top of the podcast. Sat there with my boy watching WRC live. It was fantastic. And obviously, we went into a stage, Sisteron, wasn't it? And they went flying into Sisteron. You think, oh, fair play, here we go. And then, as ever with Monty, you know, you get pictures a little bit further on where, you know, they're now down to walking pace and crawling pace and stuff like that. Had you been over that particular icy patch? Was that one of those areas? Because when you drive the stage, I know from when we spoke before, there's got to be areas where you go, oh, this is going to be interesting for them.
To be fair, I hadn't been over Sisteron.
But okay.
It's famous. You don't even have to go into Sisteron to know if there's anywhere on the rally. Where if someone says to you, a spectator, or someone says to you, where can I go to see these cars on ice? Col de Fontbelle, Sisteron. It's the only place. It's guaranteed because it's fully in the shadow and it is there every year. I mean, this year we did Sisteron the other way. Normally you go Sisteron Thord. We went Thord Sisteron. So the Col de Fontbelle, the majority of the ice was downhill. Normally they're powering up it uphill on slicks, which you just put your foot down and just try and guide it up the hill. Coming down was a completely different story. And there was, when Ogier did spin, if you watch the in-car camera, he went about another 15 metres or something, just sliding sideways down the road because it was so steep. And so very, very difficult, very, very different. Caught the best in the world out, so to speak. I mean, Chris Meek, he said it's the first time he's ever reversed into a ditch and cost himself 2 minutes. And that was by basically trying to be careful. He said, I could have just done a 360 in the road and carried on. But I thought, no, don't want to be getting onto any ice. I'll just reverse a bit and turn around. And he didn't realise the big ditch was behind him. But everything happened. Everybody had an issue or a drama at some point during the weekend.
The timing is everything, of course. Just before that happened, Paul Nagel said, respect the ice or respect the snow, I think it was. Yeah. And then literally half a second later, here we are. And I made reference to it earlier in the podcast. Great effort. I tell you what I really enjoyed was the fact that when you were going into the media zone and stuff and you were managing to speak to the drivers, but Chris just looked so despondent in the media zone, I think was it the Friday or the Saturday?
Thursday night, he saw me coming and shut the door on the car.
Right.
He had the door open talking to someone, then he saw me coming down. And to be fair, it might have just been pure coincidence. But when you watch it back on the video, the door kind of like shuts. I said, "Oh, we're going to go see Chris Peake," and the door kind of shuts, not fully, but near enough.
Yeah.
And I opened it, and he just stayed sat in the car. He's just disappointed then. But then after that, he admitted they were lost.
Yeah.
That car on bone dry tarmac. Even in wet tarmac, but bone dry tarmac, nothing can beat it. Wet tarmac is very good. But when you start to put inconsistent grip into a stage, like corners with lots of cutting on and mud and things like that, they just can't get it to work at the minute. And they're struggling badly with that. I mean, yeah, Germany could be a bit of an issue. Corsica should be fine. Spain could be very good. So it'd be interesting to see. But yeah, Christmas, and you know, he kept saying, I mean, no man's land. Well, No Man's Land was sixth place, then No Man's Land became fifth, and then it actually became fourth. And he stated, and he's so honest about it, he said, I'm only here because of other people's mistakes. We've come away with good points, 17 points or something, fourth in the championship, just behind or equal with Latvia or something like that. Who's he? 1 point down Tanak, who finished second in the rally with his power stage win, you see, Meek. And he says, we've got to take that. 17 more points than we got last year and the year before. You know what I mean? We'll take that and we'll go on. Sweden will be telling, because Sweden was where they struggled a lot last year. And from then on, to be honest, I think they could be okay. But they've got a bit of a way to go. Hyundai, I think, is the fastest, like it was last year. But it's fragile.
We're still fragile, aren't we? This is the thing, you know, it's like, you know, everybody's quite down on Citroën saying, you know, well, you know, they're still having issues and stuff like that. But, you know, last year we were talking about, you know, the Hyundai being fragile. Is this the fact, when the jokers are going to start coming in, isn't it? That's where the changes are going to start happening, I guess.
Well, Hyundai did a lot of homologation before GB last year. We've got to remember Neuville did GB. Or Spain GB, can't remember which way around it was last year. Spain GB, Australia. He did those three rounds with the car he started this year in.
Yeah,
he had an 18 car last year. And when I say fragile, Neuville's time loss was an off and then a puncture. Sordo's time loss was because he's took it in the trees. Mickelson had to rally to Pearson because he had an overshoot and it picked up a stone and it ripped the alternator belt. So maybe I'm being a bit unfair saying it's fragile because it tangled the old alternator belt around the alternator, and for him to put the new one on, he had to get the old one off and he ran out of time. That's a kind of a bit of a specific. So maybe they're not as fragile as in mechanical, but they were still prone to mistakes in general. But we'll see. They were very, very fast when they were on the road. Toyota looked very strong. I mean, look at their three drivers. Wow. Got three great drivers and three solid, kind of what looked like a very solid performance from them all. But they still got to beat the master. You know, Ogier was just great. He mastered Monty. He just knows how to read the situation. Elvin, I mean, put him on a wet road, he'd wish every time that rally was wet. He's phenomenal in the rain. His stage size in the rain. I don't know where he finds grip that the others don't, but he is just amazing in the rain. But Ogier, for me, it was Saturday morning. We all woke up. And when I woke up, I had a dozen or so text messages from ice snow crews, stage camera crews that had been driving the stage, loads of photographs of snow. And I'm like, this could be interesting. And Ogier went out, left service that morning on Saturday, 14.9 seconds ahead of Wojtek Tanak. He came out of the first stage, I think it's 30Ks. He came out of there a minute and 19 in front or something.
Wow.
He'd taken a minute and 3.6 seconds out of his closest rival.
Wow.
That takes some. He won the rally by 58 seconds.
Yeah.
And he took a minute in one stage.
Do you think Seb was still pushing as well? Do you think he was managing his time? Do you think he
No, in that stage, he stated at the end to, I can't remember who was at the end of that stage. I wasn't at the end of that stage. He said, that's the worst stage I've ever done. And I asked him about it later. I said, what do you mean it was the worst stage you've ever done? You'd taken a minute out of Hoyt. And he goes, it was horrible. And he said, I had no idea whether my speed was any good. He says, I was sliding here, I was sliding there, I was clipping snowbanks. He said, it was just awful to drive. And he said, and then you get to the end and you see the time you've done, you think, fair play, okay, that was quite good. He said, but until you see the time, you just think, like, what have I lost? What have I lost in there? And amazingly, Mickelson went 22 seconds faster than him, next car on the road. And Mickelson was spun three times in the stage. He had one spin which went round three times.
Wow.
So road was maybe clearing. But Tanak to Ogier, Ogier was right behind Tanak on the road. That's not a minute's worth of advantage. That was just Ogier on it and knowing that here's my moment to cement this rally.
Do you think that, because I've said earlier in the podcast, I think Toyota is without doubt the team this year. And the reason why I say that and the logic behind it is, and it's not because I'm doing it with the benefit of hindsight of Monte Carlo. I've gone based on the fact that they've got three drivers that there's no rotation here. There's nothing going on. They've got three drivers that essentially at the first part of the season are going to be working together as a team. To move forward. There's no rotation or nothing like that, whereas all the other teams, you know, some of it is financial, some of it is circumstance, are going to be moving drivers around.
But yeah, I mean, that's it. It's such a strong team. It's quite phenomenal. And, Lappi, very, very good. All these drivers now, and the amazing stat that Craig Breen is the only driver who's not won a World Rally in a factory car.
Yeah.
That's quite amazing when you look at it. There's 11 of them, or 12 with Padden. Add Madden now with Citroën, 13 of them. There's only one of them hasn't won a World Rally. That's quite phenomenal. And everyone is strong. And I think these cars, I think this year will be even closer than last year because of everyone's had a year to come. Toyota could and probably should dominate Sweden with their drivers and their testing program they've got there, because they've got unlimited testing on those types of roads. Same for Finland, like they did in 2017. You know, with the rule of 50 kilometer radius from your workshop, you have unlimited testing. Well, Tommy McInerney has to pull out of the driveway and he's onto a rally Finland or Sweden road. Just in the winter, it's full of snow. In the summer, it's just gravel. So they did, I think, for Finland last year, 5,000 kilometres of testing or something to Toyota. Jeez. I suspect they're heading that way for Sweden as well, for that kind of number of mileage. Tanak was testing. He's already testing today. Everyone's testing. Pattern tested yesterday. Uvil's testing today. Tanak's testing today for Sweden. But it's just Toyota can test all day long as they stay within 50 kilometres of Uvascular or Popular, not even Uvascular.
Do you think that was, because the big thing, sorry to interrupt, the big thing, of course, when the team was announced was the fact that, you know, it was going to be Tommi Mäkinen Racing based in Finland. Of course, you've got Gazoo and you've got, you know, the old TTE and, you know, all these things that are perhaps not going to work. Do you think actually we all missed the obvious here, the fact that where Tommy's located lends itself so well to a WRC team?
There was something even more obvious than that, that Mr. Toyota is one of Tommi Mäkinen's best friends.
Yeah.
So the Germans were still going, because we know that TMG was still testing their car with Sarrazin and people like that. They were still testing their car whilst Tommi Mäkinen was testing his car.
Yeah.
And the Germans were still hoping in Cologne that it was going to come off and it would change, but they hadn't kind of maybe gambled, reckoned and realized the power of Tommi Mäkinen and Mr. Toyota's eyes of that's where we're going to go. You got to remember, Tommy built this guy a four-wheel drive GT86 or whatever it's called,
yeah,
for him. So he was kind of potentially always going to get it, but it'll be interesting. I mean, Tommy's split his team slightly. There's a lot of stuff now stays in Estonia, but the rally team is based in Popular. They've got this great advantage for two rallies where they can test. But go back 2 years and remember, Hyundai also had a third car. They had two main cars, then yeah. they had a Hyundai N team.
Yeah.
Now, that N team was French registered. That rally car ran a French number plate, where the other two ran a German number plate. The reason why the N team was registered in France was so they could test at the big, massive place where everyone goes testing, the real difficult place. I can't remember what it is now. I can't remember what it's called. But that was why that team was registered in France, so they could test there.
Wow. There you go. I wonder if M Sport dip into anything from Poland. Of course, you got M Sport Poland.
No, they use Greystoke. Malcolm has.
Yeah,
Greystoke.
I know, but they've obviously got Poland. I was wondering whether they could.
No, but I think they're World Rally Team.
Oh, okay, there you go.
I think it's World Rally Team.
You mentioned Mads before. I find Mads a really, really interesting character in all this. And I said this to the boys as well earlier on the podcast, because, you know, Mads is back for Sweden. He's going to be in the third Citroen. Now, I was surprised that he was going to be in the third Citroen. I thought he might have been in, because there's this, I think PH have got one of the World Rally cars as well now, haven't they? So technically there's four C3s out there.
Yeah, because there was a picture on social media last year on the Senderidis' colour scheme on a C3, which private teams can now run 2017 spec World Rally cars. I saw that in the regs. No, Mads is in a real. I mean, that deal seemed to come across very, very, very late, as if, because when I looked at the Autosport Show driver listings, it was WRC2 competitors Mads Osberg was going on the stage at 2:45 in the afternoon, and then he all of a sudden rocks up in a Citroen shirt when the Citroen team are announced. So, he's trying to get more events. He is trying to get more rallies, but whether that's slightly funded by Mads, I don't know, or Mads is backers, I'm not sure. I mean, a one bet sponsor Mads, or whether it's a full factory drive, I don't know those kind of things. But the main thing is we've got three Citroens going to Sweden, and it's great, you know what I mean? Mads will be quick there as long as he gets the right amount of testing. So it doesn't really matter to us as the fans where the money's come from or where it hasn't come from, does it?
Absolutely. If I can just take you back just very, very briefly to the end of last season, you know, with what happened with M Sport and with happened with Sebastian Ogier. Obviously, we now know, obviously, Sebastian Ogier, of course, stay with M Sport. Did you have any even thought this time last year that we would be talking about Sebastian Ogier in year two with number one on his door, still driving an M Sport car?
Number one on the door was a big, big chance if he decided to stay. I mean, I was told in Spain last year, so that was October, that he wasn't going to Citroën. Toyota had by that point had announced Oit, or were about to announce Oit. The Oit story from going to Toyota started in Finland. That was where the big rumour started in Finland. And it looked like doors were closing on Ogier. But I believed he could win the world championship. I really did, because of how good he is. But whether he was going to stay or not, I wasn't really sure. And, you know, he's still desperate for it. He really is desperate for it. And last year he stated a couple of times that he would like to stay, and he'd like M Sport, but he just wanted more manufacturer support. And I think he got a bit of a rough deal off some fans and things like that, and some journalists, because I think they all thought he wanted this more money for himself. It wasn't for himself. He wanted it for Malcolm, yeah, so that he could keep developing the car, because already Citroën had come with developments during last year. Hyundai came towards the end of the season with developments. Toyota were changing stuff. M Sport ran that car near enough as it was. Near enough as it was all season. There was obviously some upgrades, but not a huge amount. Not as much as the others were doing. That puts a point to that the car was very good from the start. But that's what Seb wanted the Ford backing for. Not for his own wallet, but for Malcolm to be able to keep developing. And I spoke to Mark Rushford from Ford Performance in Monty, and he says they're working on all sorts for M Sport. You know, M Sport have sent people out to America to go and look at stuff, and the car's in the wind tunnel. They've got engine stuff coming. They've got aerodynamic stuff coming, and things like that, geometry, the pickup points, all that kind of stuff is all being enhanced by this new involvement from Ford Performance. So it might not be some of it, might not be hard cash, but it's a huge amount of R&D that Malcolm doesn't have to pay for.
Which means he can divert that money into other areas of the car.
Yeah, that's it. Or paying Sebastian Ogier and Julian Nicasio. Yeah.
Are we surprised that they now, because I suppose a little bit's been lost. Obviously, we all get excited by the liveries anyway. Of course we do. And there wasn't a great deal going on with the other cars. But of course, now the M Sport cars are all running the Red Bull livery, which the Red Bull livery has always been the one to have, really, isn't it? You think back, you know, over the Citroën days, and then you go Volkswagen. You know, it is the lucky mark having that Red Bull livery.
It seems to be, and you were right. It kind of like just going, oh yeah, Elvin's car's Red Bull now. What we've got to remember is Elvin is a Red Bull athlete in the UK. He already had his own personal deal, but not just Elvin's car. Sunderland and Camelys were Red Bull cars in WRC2. So I don't know facts and figures of how much money's come into the pot to do that deal. But I think last year, and again, I could be wrong, but I think last year's Red Bull deal was more on the back of Ogier, because it was only on Ogier's car. I think it was an extension to his personal sponsorship deal, whereas this looks like it's a proper team sponsor. It does look good. As you say, the others haven't had so many changes.
I was just about to ask you about that. You see the cars, you know, every few weeks. Looking at the cars in Monty, was there anything blatantly obvious you could see from the cars that finished Australia to the cars that started Monty? You know, was there an extra bit on a spoiler here or an extra bit there? Or
Toyota, they were the only car, if you say finish in Australia, because Neuville's car.
Of course, yeah, it was the 18.
What he started in Monty to look at it. Citroën looked virtually the same. I couldn't really see any extra modifications on that. Toyota had some front end stuff. Their front bumper and their front wheel arches were different. They've heavily gone on a front aero. But to look at the Fiesta, there's nothing. But there's a lot of engine upgrades. There's a lot of, as we said, pickup points and things like that, and geometry, which has been updated. But stuff you can't see, but is massively important.
Who do you see in the 2018 as the standout driver for you know, I think looking back on 17, we can look at, you know, Lappi's performance, you know, on the few events that he did, you know, obviously winning his first WRC round so quickly, you know, Sunderland was impressive. And of course, he's got, you know, a multi-round deal driving the third car at M Sport this year. Where do you see the standout performers potentially in 2018?
It's a really difficult question because there's so many of them. I mean, obviously, you obviously set the benchmark again. But I said to someone about a week before Monty, I said, Lappi could cause a surprise this season. And he was due to get fourth before that. It wasn't the slide that cost him his fourth place in Monty on a power stage. It was, he couldn't get reverse. That's what cost him, dropped him to seventh, because he couldn't select reverse. Because he was just a little bit kind of eager, I think, and the anti-lag was still in and it just wouldn't select the gear properly. But I think Lappi is just phenomenal. But then Tanak, we can see in New York Tanak emerging. He's second place. They just take big points here. So you look at Neuville, God, he's fast. He is so fast and so confident in his own ability at the minute. You know, even when he dropped 4 minutes in the first stage, yeah, that's Monty. But just tomorrow's another day, let's get on with it. You know, I mean, stage win, puncture, whatever. You know what I mean? Just that's the way it goes. He's really changed as Neuville in the last 2 years. He had that bad 12 months about 2.5 years ago. And since then, he's just a different person. I believe in myself. I really can. But to answer your question, I really don't know. But I think maybe the biggest surprise could be Lappi. Even though it's not going to be a surprise because we all know how good he is. I think Lappi could kind of upset championship plans. He might not win it himself, but I think he could upset other people's championship plans by dropping in a lot of podiums in a couple of weeks.
Fantastic. Final thoughts, Jules, from Monty. Anything else that screams out at you?
O'Shea was just great, but I mean, just how competitive is every team winning a stage and things like that. It was great. It really was. And we go to Sweden next. And again, that's just, they've got a lot of snow from what I've been told in Sweden at the minute. A lot of snow, which let's hope it stays. It's snowing again, I think, this week in the rally area. So we're in for we had a great season last year. We've got a great season in prospect this year. Hopefully, with the WRC promoters all live, we can show a lot more of that. I mean, I think it was someone told me 40 hours of live streaming we had in Monty compared to what we normally have of 3 hours a rally. We got 40. And yeah, there's hopefully the fans to be able to watch what's going on. There will be some bumps along the way. You know what I mean? Monte Carlo in there. In the ice and snow, and sometimes the helicopter can't fly, so it kind of limits what we can show. But you know, we can get to Mexico and the altitude, and things might not happen quite right. But the sport is changing and changing for the
fantastic.
Better.
Fantastic! What a great place to finish that, Jules. We will catch you up soon. Thank you as ever for joining us.
No problem.
There you go, folks. We will be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole next week.